So our next speaker is Charlie White from Penn State, and he's going to talk to us about predicting corneal with a soil organic matter test and cover crop nitrogen credits.
Sure. Great. Good morning, everyone. Feels like afternoon. for those of us from the East Coast, at least it does. So I come at this soil health framework from an extension background, and it's been a really exciting couple of years out in the extension world, seeing this renewed interest in soils, the so-called soil renaissance, and soil health has been a big part of that. I also work with a lot of soil test lab people who are looking at these soil health tests and trying to figure out how they can utilize them in the existing framework of soil testing, which is really geared towards being able to provide a recommendation, providing some kind of actionable information to the farmer. So if we can learn how to interpret these soil health tests to provide something relevant to a farmer, they're going to be much more widely adopted in the soil testing community. So that's kind of the framework that I'm tackling this soil health problem. I also work a lot with nitrogen and nitrogen cycling, and nitrogen mineralization is one of the processes that soil health testing is trying to capture. Of course, this is a biological process, the microbially mediated turnover of organic matter into a mineral form of nitrogen that crops can use. If we could estimate this process through some kind of soil test, it might help guide fertilizer recommendations, you know, perhaps be able to sort out sites that have enough biological nitrogen supply from organic matter such that we could reduce or maybe even eliminate fertilizer inputs and reduce some of our nitrogen losses into water and into the atmosphere. So the question is with nitrogen mineralization, if we wanted to estimate this process, should we do it by measuring the pool size of some sort of organic substrate? And if we want to go that way, which pool do we measure? Or do we want to tackle this through the opposite direction of actually measuring the microbial activity directly? And, of course, Joe the farmer is asking us, well, can you interpret these results into some kind of relevant recommendation for me? You know, let's have more than a $95 conversation starter out of these soil health tests. So there's a lot of approaches to estimating and interpreting nitrogen mineralization, and on this slide you can see a number of different types of operationally defined pools that we can measure of organic matter that might mineralize. There's also a number of different ways to measure decomposition directly, and then there's different outcomes, relevant outcomes that we might be able to predict. And these topics have been, you know, a topic of study for almost 100 years. And just barely scratching the surface, you know, all these lines show, just the studies I've listed up there, show various ways that people have related one pool size to, you know, a decomposition process and attempting to predict something relevant. And we've learned a lot along the way, and we're definitely, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, as Google Scholar likes to say. But there's still been a lot of frustration and a lot of dead ends that we've encountered along the way. And one of the things that I've observed from all of these studies is that we've taken a linear modeling approach, right? Some form of linear regression, and we might dress it up with, you know, a broken line or a plateau response or something like that. But essentially, we're trying to simplify a very complex biological process into essentially some form of a straight line relationship. And I think that's been at the root of some of the problems in terms of trying to address you know, the spectrum of getting to a predictive soil test. So I wanted to take a little bit of a different approach to analyzing some of this data and interpreting it in order to make a recommendation. And we can turn to some of the ecological modeling as a reference point. And there's actually relatively simple conceptual models of the decomposition and mineralization process. So in this figure here, we've got a substrate here, a cover crop biomass here, and it decomposes or it's attacked by the microbes and it's decomposed with a certain rate, which we indicate with K here. And then this epsilon is what we might call the carbon use efficiency or the humification efficiency. It's the proportion of decomposed carbon that is assimilated into microbial biomass. And the fraction that isn't assimilated is respired as carbon dioxide, right? So this carbon decomposition is coupled to nitrogen. There's, you know, nitrogen in the cover crop biomass here, and that decomposition is coupled to the carbon decomposition, and a certain fraction of the nitrogen that's decomposed is assimilated into the microbial biomass. And I've put up a number of these formulas here that mathematically represent the partitioning and flows of these materials. And we can take those and turn it into sort of an ecological predictive model to predict something like corn yield. So here we're predicting yields of unfertilized corn. So for example, and unfertilized means it's getting its nitrogen from biological mineralization processes, right? So we can use that unfertilized yield variation as a reflection of the nitrogen mineralization response. So here we take these processes from our conceptual model and we put them into an equation form here. And we can take these parameters. So this is the rate. We can think about this over the course of an entire cover crop grow or cover crop decomposition season, from when you terminate the cover crop to when the corn finishes taking up nitrogen. We can estimate that rate as K, and then we can combine it with a nitrogen use efficiency, so the efficiency with which that mineralized nitrogen is converted into a grain yield. That's one conceptualization of nitrogen use efficiency. We can abstract those into a lumped parameter, which we can then fit to a calibration data set. So essentially that's what we did for cover crop residues. And this is the calibration, and we reported it in a paper in Agronomy Journal earlier this year. You can see this carbon utilization efficiency here is about 0.5, 0.49 is what we fit to a data set of several hundred observations from multiple different cover crop experiments. And so that's, in the typical range, we often say about half of the carbon is used, assimilated by the microbes, and half is respired. So our data set, bore that out. And we got several different efficiency terms here, which is the lump of nitrogen use efficiency and a decomposition rate. And we showed that there were different, these numbers were different for if the cover crop immobilized or mineralized nitrogen. And we got a very good fit, an R squared of 0.82, to represent the change in corn yield after growing a cover crop. And you can see that this change in corn yield, spanned from large yield reductions due to immobilizing cover crops to modest yield increases. Now, the important thing is that this delta Y here is the difference from an unfertilized fallow control. So if you wanted to take this model out to a farmer and say, here's what your cover crop is going to do for your yield, then they would have to know what the yield is in their unfertilized fallow control. And that's not something that a lot of farmers typically know, right? Most people don't grow corn without fertilizer. So it would be nice if we had another model that could give us this number here, that would give us the yield of an unfertilized crop in a bare soil, right? And of course, that's going to be the nitrogen that becomes available from the soil organic matter. So we can use a very similar conceptualization of decomposition of soil organic matter here on the right-hand side of our chart. And these are essentially the same equations. And we can put this up now for our soil organic matter. And here we're using the carbon pool size modified by the carbon to nitrogen ratio. And there's a decomposition rate there and the nitrogen use efficiency. And we have the C-to-N ratio of the soil organic matter and the C-to-N ratio of the microbial biomass here. Now, what we observed in our calibration data set is that the C-to-N ratio of the soil organic matter was uniformly across all the sites, all the soils, was 10 to 1, which is approximately the same as microbial biomass. And that makes a lot of sense when you think about the fact that most of the organic matter in the soil has been through this microbial decomposition process, so it's going to converge on the C-to-N ratio of microbial biomass. So for our model calibration in this study, we actually canceled those two out because they were approximately the same. So our model actually becomes much simpler, and it's just the total soil carbon times this lumped parameter, which is the rate times the nitrogen use efficiency, times 1 minus the carbon use efficiency. Okay, that would give us our change in yield due to the soil organic matter nitrogen mineralization. Now, there's another angle that we could potentially tackle this from using our conceptual model, and that's by measuring the CO2 respiration, right? So the CO2 respiration is equal to the pool size times the decomposition rate times 1 minus the carbon use efficiency. And if you, you know, substitute this CS times 1 minus epsilon up here, you could use the CO2 flux as potentially an input to the model. So we simplify, we can create another model that's just the change in yield due to the CO2 respiration times some coefficient there. And this is interesting because one of the soil health tests that hits the market here is the CO2 respiration, right? So what we wanted to do was to see if nitrogen mineralization models that are driven by an organic matter test and the cover crop biomass nitrogen content and carbon content could be calibrated to predict nitrogen supply to corn. And we wanted to compare two ways of doing this. One was through a measurement of the total carbon content of the soil or concentration versus the CO2 respiration of a dried and re-wetted soil. And this is the same CO2 respiration that we saw in Steve's talk and that we saw earlier before the break too. The Solvita test or Alan Franzlubers has a 3-day mineralization. Cornell does a 96-hour mineralization in their test. The other thing we wanted to look at is, does soil texture control this carbon use efficiency? In a lot of the ecosystem models, like Century and Rothsee, they're regulating this carbon use efficiency based on soil texture, with sandier textures, more sand, having a lower carbon use efficiency. So we wanted to look at whether soil texture should regulate that. We had obtained a calibration data set of 125 observations from 9 cover crop experiments across a wide range of farming systems and soil types in Pennsylvania. In each plot, we measured the cover crop biomass nitrogen and C-to-N ratio, the total percent carbon based on elemental combustion from a 0 to 20 centimeter sampling depth, the 24-hour CO2 respiration of a dried and re-wetted soil sampled in June after the cover crop was terminated, and then a soil texture analysis. And we did the soil texture analysis by block just because it's prohibitively expensive to do that at the plot level. And then our response variable was the corn yield with no fertilizer applied. So the model specification, we used the cover crop nitrogen supply model from the previously published paper to account for the cover crop nitrogen mineralization component of each of these experiments, because these were all experiments with cover crops grown, and some of them didn't even have a fallow control for us to refer to. So we used this previously calibrated model. We tested 2 organic matter supply models, one based on the pool size of total carbon, the other based on the 24-hour CO2 burst. A model to regulate the carbon use efficiency based on texture, so there's an intercept term and then just linear terms for percent clay, silt, and sand. And then we also observed through some preliminary model fitting that there was a quadratic response. And this is kind of a classic corn yield response to additional nitrogen. You see it with fertilizer. We saw it in this data set with organic nitrogen inputs. So we essentially add up the soil and the cover crop component and then allow for a quadratic term to get the total yield of the unfertilized corn crop here. Okay, so this is actually a system of equations, and we put this into ProcNL mixed in SAS and use the calibration data set to iteratively solve for these parameters. So here's the results. So this is the soil C model, and we saw that it did a fairly good job of predicting unfertilized corn yields. So an R squared of 0.7 and a root mean square error of 1.2 megagrams per hectare. You can see that we had observed values of corn yields that ranged from a little over 3 megagrams per hectare all the way up to over 12 megagrams per hectare. So some very high-yielding sites, some very low-yielding sites. We had a really nice wide span of data that allowed us to calibrate this model. So we had this. We used the same cover crop nitrogen supply model from previously. The coefficient that we fit for the soil organic matter model was 14.2 for this lumped parameter there. And then soil texture did turn out to regulate the carbon use efficiency, right? So we have an intercept of 0.52, and then it increases with the clay percentage and decreases with the sand percentage. And then there was a quadratic yield response to the nitrogen supply as well. You can see this parameter there was statistically significant. So let's look at the soil texture regulation of the carbon use efficiency. If you think back to your intro soil fertility class, if you talked about nitrogen mineralization, this carbon use efficiency, you probably heard that it typically ranges from 0.25 to 0.5, right, Ray? That's what you taught me in your soil fertility class. And so this data set, through this model calibration, essentially the data set contained that range, right? So as sand went from 15% up to 35%, we saw the carbon use efficiency drop from 0.5 to about 0.25. So that's kind of neat that this ecological process is embedded in the data set and our calibration picked that out. So it'll be important as we move forward to represent the controls, the soil textural controls on mineralization. So the CO2 burst, the 24-hour CO2 burst, gave a decent prediction, but not as good, okay? So we're only seeing an R squared of about 0.5 here, and the error has gone up to one, root mean square error has gone up to 1.5 megagrams per hectare. And actually, at first it was worse than this, but I allowed some of the parameters to vary a little bit. So in the cover crop nitrogen supply model, I let these parameters here vary. I freed them up from our previous calibration, under the theory that perhaps the cover crop residues decomposing were being detected by our CO2 burst, and we didn't want to double count for them, right? So actually, these values are about half of what we saw in the previously calibrated model, and some of that might be due to the appearance of that decomposition flux in the CO2 measurement. So the soil organic matter nitrogen supply, I also allowed that to vary by whether the plots were tilled or no-tilled. And one of the interesting things is that we saw is the coefficient here for a no-tillage was half that, or a little more than half that for tillage. Okay, and if you think about it, what's happening is you're taking a no-till soil, you're taking it out of the field, you're drying it, you're crumbling it, and you're measuring the CO2 respiration. And that process of destroying the soil structure and the intact aggregation is potentially causing a larger burst than you would experience under the field conditions. And so these parameters actually show that by reducing the credit of the CO2 burst under this artificial lab condition. Now, one of the challenges with this model is because the organic matter decomposition doesn't have a term for the carbon use efficiency when you use the CO2 flux, we're having a lot of trouble getting the model to converge on a stable representation of soil texture, which is a representation of textural controls on this carbon use efficiency. So because of that instability, we went back to the previous calibration of this from the previous model so that we could use that in the cover crop supply. So that was one of the limitations we ran into with this. And then we also saw that there wasn't, under this model formulation, there was not a quadratic response. So that quadratic term dropped out. So challenges and future opportunities. Why was the CO2 respiration model less accurate? So maybe the CO2 burst measured in the lab is not representative of season-long carbon and nitrogen mineralization rates under field conditions, right? If you look at some of the literature, consumer literature about these tests, they say, oh, this drip, what, drying and rewetting, it's a natural field occurring process and we're capturing that. Well, yes, it is, but, are the soils really drying out at 50 degrees centigrade for 3 days and then wetting up, and are they doing that all season long? No, they might do it a couple times and probably not that severe. So maybe this lab test, this operational lab test, is not actually a good representation of field conditions. Alternatively, maybe this CO2 burst could be a valid method, but we've got the wrong ecological model to interpret those results. So we need to do some deep thinking about what's actually occurring to that carbon as the soil dries out and it re-wets and there's microbial activity. Maybe there's a different ecological structure. I'd like to leave that open for possibility. So on the positive side, we did see that total soil C and the cover crop C and N contents interpreted with an ecological model had promise as predictors of nitrogen supply to corn. And we could expand upon this work by calibrating and validating the model in different regions, and then finding a way to integrate this process into a decision-making framework about how much nitrogen fertilizer to apply. Ultimately, that's going to be the golden ticket at the end, is being able to say to the farmer, okay, you can adjust your fertilizer amount by this much. And I think there's ways that we could use this approach, perhaps in a mass balance way of calculating fertilizer requirements. We could use this approach to credit the biological nitrogen supply from soil organic matter and cover crops. So thank you. I'm happy to take any questions if we have time. Yes, sir. Sure. So those factors definitely affect nitrogen in the field, and those factors are not in the model. So changes in that would definitely show up as errors in the model. And they're very sophisticated process-based models like ADAPT-N and, Climate Corporation and Pioneer have their versions of these process-based models that take all of that into account. The idea with this model is to have something that's quite simple and that basically operates on average conditions to help you as a planning tool before the season starts, so that you can get a handle on that. And certainly some of those in-season losses to denitrification and leaching probably account for some of the error that we saw in the model. So this definitely does not take those very fine-grained processes into account, and that's certainly a limitation of it. Yes, ma'am. Sure. I think that's certainly a possibility that we could, working it with agronomists and industry representatives that can help set up some controls. I think some farmers would be willing to do that. So I think that's still a possibility to have that, but hopefully we could get away from, having to have a portion of every field in the long run. And you have another question? Sure, I think that would be great, and unfortunately in Pennsylvania, where we've done all this work, we do not have that as part of our nitrogen recommendation systems. I know in some of the you know, upper Midwest states, I've seen that as part of their calculators. And so it would be interesting to see how those, that crediting of the total organic matter pool, you know, penciled out compared to this. And I think ultimately this is a way at getting to that same thing, where if you have a total carbon, or maybe you could calibrate it on organic matter, you could say, yes, this is worth, you know, so many, you know, pounds of nitrogen. And if you know the soil texture, that seems to be a very important property as well, regulating the nitrogen mineralization. So, yeah, I think we could do that.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, great.